Welcome to the Project Zion podcast. This podcast explores the unique spiritual and theological gifts Community of Christ offers for today's world.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Project Zion podcast. It's me, Brittany Mangleson, your host, and I am really excited to bring you another episode in our series, What's Brewing? And this is a series where we talk about mission. And if you are on Facebook and are involved in any Community of Christ groups, you have likely seen the guests that we have on today and have seen the new ministries that are coming out of Portsmouth, Ohio. So we have on Justin DeLong. We're going to talk about how he got his congregation and community involved with Pride, as well as a new church that he is planting. So Justin, thank you for coming on today.
Thank you for having me on and getting to know a little bit about what we're doing. It's exciting.
Yeah, I'm really excited. And I should say that this is probably going to go up on Thanksgiving, and we are recording it just a couple days before. Because this is such a hot topic, your ministry is getting a lot of attention, and I kind of wanted to feed off of that energy. So I just want to thank you just straight out of the gates for coming on at such short notice without much of an outline or anything. I was just like, we got to get this recorded. So I'm excited. So thank you, thank you, thank you.
And thank you.
I want to get to know about you a little bit. So why don't you just give us some sort of brief introduction of who you are, maybe some of your background with Community of Christ. Did you grow up Community of Christ? What has your experience been? What priesthood office do you hold? Just kind of a whatever you would like to share about yourself.
All right. I'm Justin DeLong. I was born and raised in Southern Ohio in a town called Portsmouth. I didn't really get active in the church until around college age. My family has been in the church for generations. I think technically I'm sixth generation RLDS or Community of Christ. First year of college, I went to Graceland. Kind of was the turning point for me. And that's really where I started to sense God's call in my life. Although I was only there a year, I wouldn't change that experience for anything, because that was really the turning point to show me that I could follow Jesus and to be active in his mission to the world. Following that, I was able to take an internship in Chattanooga, Tennessee through Graceland. And that really kind of rocked my world and turned my world upside down a little bit as to how church is and what church is. Yeah, that really was the game changer for me and influenced my decision to move to Chattanooga. And I lived there for 5 years and was active in the congregation there. And that's really where my transformation and my desire to be active in Community of Christ really took hold. And although I was raised Community of Christ, I didn't really get involved until I moved away and was active in a different congregation. It was there where I was called to serve as priest and elder. After moving back to Ohio, I began to seek options and seek ways to do church differently. I didn't really feel comfortable in the church as usual setting. And it was there where I started to dive into new ways of doing things and outreach to reach new people and to bring people into Community of Christ, into a Community of Christ that really truly reflected our mission and identity and beliefs. And a few years ago, I was called and ordained to the office of 70, and that's the current office that I hold. And I just do what I can to try to live out that calling to bring Christ's mission to those who are hurting and need a community of support and love. And that's what ultimately led to this new church plant and a new experience for everyone really that's involved with it.
Thank you. I'm curious as to how this all started. You were ordained to 70, so it's my understanding that the 70 are very missional minded and looking for new expressions and ways of doing church and maybe trying to think outside of the box a little bit. And it seems like that is what you have done with your current ministry and the congregation, the church that you're planting. I'm curious about the timeline. When did you realize that reaching out to the LGBTQ community in your community was what needed to happen?
Well, there was a school board meeting at the school that I had gone to and graduated from. There was a school board meeting it was a situation that happened at the elementary school where a child identified as being transgender, and there was an issue of which bathroom she would use. That gained a lot of scrutiny in the area that we live in. There is a very fundamental Christian view that is the majority of where we live. So that kind of showed me that there was so much Christian pushback towards the LGBT issues in our area that was very vocal and very dominant. So I began to reach out to those individuals that were involved in this school board meeting and reached out to the parents of the child that was dealing with death threats. A six-year-old child was even dealing with death threats from grown adults. And that really showed me that there needs to be a place for people like that to come and to feel loved and welcomed and not have to worry about their physical safety or their emotional well-being, to simply come and just be themselves. So I reached out to them for about a year and chatted with them to kind of gain their trust because they have been so severely damaged by their previous church. I think it's safe to share a little bit of their story. Of their pastor was also their pediatrician, and their pastor counseled them to give the child more daddy time. That would fix him from trying to act like a girl. And basically every time that he referenced the child as a he and said that every time he acted like a girl, to basically spank him until he stopped acting like that, and that would fix the problem. So that was their pastor's counsel. So obviously they were very traumatized by that and left that church and pretty much Christianity altogether until we had reached out and tried to establish a connection and a relationship with them. So that was really the first moment that I realized that something like that needed to happen. Something that created a space for them to come was really beneficial and needed in our community. So the first actual step that we took was to host a transgender awareness workshop in one of our congregations that allowed them to come and speak to people and to share their story and give a perspective of maybe, you know, that they people haven't heard before. So it's basically just trying to bring awareness through education and personal story rather than the typical Facebook argument that you see and on news articles and things like that. So that was really the first step that we took, and it just kind of kept growing from there.
It sounds like you just responded to a need that was already happening in your community. It's not like you went out and sought this or targeted, sounds like the wrong phrase or word, but you didn't isolate one group with this idea in your head of like, I'm going to go fix this issue. It was just a response to what was naturally happening.
Exactly. It was just something that we seen needed to happen, and we responded to that need, and it just kept growing.
What was the response for the family feeling like their story could have an impact on people? I mean, was that helpful to them to share their story with others?
It was. I mean, I don't want to put words into their mouths or anything, but, you know, from what they've shared, just seeing people who were kind of not set on one particular side of the issue, just come and ask questions and to hear their stories and to share their hearts. And I think that has been very beneficial for them because it shows them that there are people out there that are willing to listen and not just jump off the fly and criticize and judge them, but they're actually willing to sit down and have a conversation. And I think that's been the biggest impact for them, and to just simply share their story.
Yeah, so it sounds like there's a lot of relationship building that's been happening, and that, you know, maybe minds and hearts are changed through the relationship and through the sharing of stories, which I think is ultimately how we're going to change the world. So,
yeah, absolutely.
So what brought you to get involved with Pride? If I understand correctly, Pride happened this year because of you and your group. Is that a correct way to frame that?
I would say that Pride happened because of the group. Not, okay. I don't want to take any credit credit for that. Yeah, they just thought that it would be an amazing thing to have a public expression of acceptance and inclusiveness in the community. There are lots of anti-LGBT groups and churches that are very vocal And it's kind of caused people to leave Christianity and to kind of hide in the shadows of our community. And we just thought that it would be amazing to have something that would allow them to be themselves and to have a platform to share their story and to share their voice. And that was the ultimate reason of having Pride. And it was very successful. We had about a month. We decided about a month before to do this event, and we had planned on maybe 20 people. So we thought we had plenty of time. And it was attended by well over 400 people. And we had people come and speak and had drag performances from people who were local at one point and had moved because they felt like they couldn't be themselves, but were now able to come back and to share their art and to share their story in the community that they grew up in. It was just a very emotional experience for a lot of people. Some shared that they had lived here all their lives, and it was the first time they felt comfortable holding hands in public.
I remember seeing your post about it on Facebook and just being just so excited for the energy, your post before it happened, and just all the planning and soliciting advice for logistics, et cetera. And then once the event was happening, I swelled with pride in your community and what you were able to accomplish. And like you said, I remember looking at your conversations about it before, and you thought that there was only going to be a handful of people there and maybe it would grow in consecutive years, but then to see how many people showed up and how many different groups and organizations that were represented was really, really inspiring. And it kind of went viral by Community of Christ standards, which I thought was great. One thing that I did want, that I was curious about is, was it just a parade? Was it booths? What exactly was the event like?
It started out with a parade. They met at the local university and marched down Gay Street to the park. And they were met at the park with people that had tents set up. There was Community of Christ tent, PFLAG tent, and several organizations from around the state that had people to come down at such short notice to be represented there. Even local shops, local LGBT friendly shops, and the health department, city health department, and places like that came to offer their services free. They did free HIV testing, just things like that. Basically, it was a non-commercialized Pride event, and the reports that we've got from people and the feedback was that it was just a nice down-to-earth, homey feeling where they just felt comfortable. And we had speakers from several organizations from around Ohio that came and touched on, you know, some of their professional expertise on certain subjects. Dr. Leibowitz from the Columbus Children's National Hospital was there to talk about trans youth. And it was just an amazing experience to have professionals come and share their expertise on LGBT health and issues while we ended it with a few drag performances.
Absolutely love that. I'm curious about the pushback that you received. How did the overall community take this event?
They took it rather well than what I had expected. I expected a lot of, you know, of course we had internet pushback and Facebook pushback. Before we got to the park about 7 or 8 in the morning, someone had littered the park with the anti-LGBT pamphlets. They were basically hundreds that were scattered all over the ground, and LGBT flags, the rainbow flag nailed to trees with condemning scriptures written on them. But that was pretty much the only negative pushback that we had. We didn't have any protesters or anything during Pride, but I received some messages today that there will be particular groups say that they would be there 2019. So responding to that with love and understanding and just letting them do their thing and not really trying to focus on the negative, but I'm sending a message of love and positivity throughout our activities. So the community hasn't really responded negatively as much as we had thought. And there's been an overwhelming message of support from LGBT people and allies.
That's good. I am sorry about the pushback though. And yeah, I'm sure that was not a fun sight to walk into the park and see it littered with anti-LGBT material. What would you say are some of the lessons that you learned from Pride? Or like, what are you going to maybe do differently next year, or those kinds of things?
Feedback that we got the most was they wanted it to last longer. So, I mean, like I said, we were only planning on doing something for 20 people. So we didn't only plan like 3 hours, but they wanted it to last much longer. On a more serious note, the main thing that I learned was that, you know, maybe I could have been wrong all of these years about how Portsmouth, Ohio, about the community in Portsmouth, Ohio, that, you know, they're not all this fundamental condemning and judging people, that there is a large group of people out there that are welcoming and loving, and they are just now starting to realize that there's a voice out there for them and a platform for them to be themselves. And I think that's the biggest thing that I've learned, is there are people out there that need us, and they are willing to step up for others that need them. And it's just been an overwhelming sense of support. And it's kind of made me finally proud to be from this little small town. So that was probably the main thing that I've taken from this experience.
That's awesome. I'm glad that it was surprisingly supportive for the community. I mean, that's always great. So switching gears a little bit, we've mentioned a couple of times that you are planting a church. Do you want to walk us through that a little bit? I want to say maybe that was happening parallel to the Pride event, or I'm a little fuzzy on the timeline, actually.
Yeah, we have actually been meeting for about the past year and a half.
Okay.
Started out meeting in the basement of another congregation. We wasn't really sure how it was going to go, and we wasn't sure if it was just going to be like a support group that met together and, you know, was embracive of the LGBT community, or if it was actually going to take its own identity and its own roots. That was a little fuzzy for us as well, you know, starting out. But that was, you know, obviously way before Pride, and Pride came from our gathering, our planning of what we wanted to do in the community. We have just recently moved into our new location and have taken the steps to become an emerging congregation. We felt that, you know, although there are four congregations in our county, that there really needed to be a group of people that was willing to be publicly visible in the LGBT community. And that was our goal that eventually led us to decide that we need to form as an actual Community of Christ congregation to be that visible congregation that's living the enduring principles and willing to take a stand for those LGBT individuals. So that's where we are now. We just put up a billboard on Monday, you know, advertising for Portsmouth Community of Christ, and there's a big rainbow flag and LGBT rights slogan on it. And we've been having new people probably for the past 5 weeks. We've had new people come through the doors, and it's just been an awesome experience. Seeing the response and seeing how people are responding to an inclusive church, because there really isn't an inclusive church locally. There is one that's inclusive, but you wouldn't see them being publicly visible as an LGBT ally.
So I'm curious to know what the process is like when new people are coming in who have been deeply wounded by church. I can relate to that a little bit with my own congregation. How do you, as a minister, help them reframe church and reframe the Bible and reframe the gospel? Like, what role or what Community of Christ distinctives come into play with that?
When we have new people, we start off each meeting anyways. Like, we usually sit in a circle, so it's a tight-knit experience for people to just share and just simply be. We always do a go-around, and everybody shares about the week, you know, the week that they've had so far. You know, they're invited to participate or not participate, depending on if they are comfortable or not. To answer the question about what Community of Christ things that are presented to make them feel more comfortable, I would say that we really push on the blessings of community. I think that is pretty much mentioned every meeting. That's our primary goal, is to develop a relationship and to build a community to kind of help people feel more comfortable and trusting. So that's the primary goal, is to build a welcoming community and not really focus on any negative aspects of scripture or Christianity, but to first allow them to come and feel welcomed. So that's basically, you know, that's really the environment that we're trying to create, and to help them feel as they walk in the door. And then later on, you know, on different days, we dive into theology and things like that.
So behind you, I can see the Enduring Principles poster that John Hamer has created. And I'm wondering, when you're having these conversations about reframing Christianity, what are some of the main values or the core things that everybody agrees on? Because I'm assuming that you guys all come from a very broad and diverse background religiously, with different levels of understanding of, you know, biblical scholarship or what have you. But what are the things that really tie you guys together?
Once again, I would go back to the sense of community. Most of us come from different religious backgrounds, like you have stated, and different Christian denominations or lack thereof. They, you know, some consider themselves atheist, and some who meet with us consider themselves agnostic, and they still do, but they're looking for a community that is what I would call living Christ's mission of peace and justice and love and inclusiveness. And that's really the thing that we have in common, is to share on that message of love and inclusiveness to all of God's children. And I think that's the bond that connects us all together, despite any kind of differences that we may have theologically or spiritually, for that matter, that they see the importance of community, and that's what they want to work to build. And I think that's the primary thing we get out of the Enduring Principles, is to create an inclusive and welcoming community of love and hope and joy that Jesus lived his life for.
Along with being non-threatening, it also just sounds very open and welcoming and invitational. And so I'm wondering, since so many people, especially in our generation, and this is something that I ask on a lot of the Chai Can't Even, where I talk to young adults, where so many people in our generation have left religion and don't find meaning in organized religion anymore, I find it interesting that kind of leading with community and these shared values, whether they come out of the Enduring Principles or what have you, it really intrigues me, this idea that community is still needed. So I guess my question is, how do you respond to that? If people are just trying to push community away or push religion away, what value do you see there being in community and in a religious organization?
Yeah, I would say that a lot of people in the LGBT community have been severely damaged by religion. And that's been an overwhelming answer that people have given, you know, when they've given feedback, is that they're not looking for church, they're not looking for religion, but they want, you know, a support system and a group of people that will walk with them. And honestly, that's what I'm looking for too. I'm looking for a community that would do what Jesus did and try to make a difference in each other's lives and in the community that we live in. From what I've experienced so far, you know, Jesus' mission ties in really well with what we're trying to do without really getting into really the religious traditions or expectations of organized religion. And we try to do our church, obviously there's a pastor, most churches have pastors, but is to form a steering committee that kind of guides the group or guides the community in the direction that we want to go, rather than one person making all of the decisions. I mean, it kind of gives everybody a sense of ownership and a sense of worth, I guess, to where everybody is equal in what happens and in which way we go. Of course, you have conflicting personalities sometimes that makes things a little messy. Everybody has their view of how things should go, and we kind of just love each other through it and move on. So that's basically what we try to focus on, is just building a community of inclusiveness and not really worrying much about how things are done as to why things are done and how we can better do those, reaching all of our community. You know, we like the sacraments, you know, we may not traditionally do communion the way that it's typically done. We may sit around the table and have a glass of grape juice and bread and butter or honey or whatever, and share in community and share in a meal rather than the formalized serving of the emblems.
That was going to be one of my questions, is the question of the sacraments. And I know for me, sacraments, what I used to call ordinances, were almost kind of a trigger for me for a little while. And I wondered how any sort of ritualistic aspect of how we traditionally think of church, how that's approached in your community. Have you run into other sacramental things? I mean, are people actually joining Community of Christ? Have you had confirmations or baptisms or things like that?
We did have a baptism and confirmation last month, and that was done obviously in a traditional sense. I don't think there's much room to work with, you know, changing things on those two sacraments. But yeah, I mean, the response has been well with the more serious things such as the sacrament. But like I said, with communion, there's a little bit of room there to kind of make it feel more inclusive than the traditional sense of how we take communion. But yeah, we, you know, administration to the sick, baby blessings, we've done all of that, and everyone feels comfortable with kind of the sacredness and the meaning of all of that without really feeling too much of the organized religion part of it. You know, they see it more of a community building and a sense of love for each other rather than a ritual.
I really like that. I think that that's kind of how I've had to reframe sacramental things on my own. And I should say, and I feel like I've been plenty clear about this on Project Zion, but I'm okay with the sacraments now. The church is an elder and I'm good with them. But I just know that, you know, when you have been harmed by religion, some of those more official points of religion can be a little sticky sometimes.
Yeah. And we still have people who don't take communion, and who kind of shy away from, you know, praying or doing those types of things. And we try to be sensitive to those as well. Sometimes for the closing prayer, we may go around the circle and say a positive statement to our neighbor or offer a positive statement to our neighbor. And that would be our prayer. We just try to be mindful and inclusiveness of everyone and try to do things in such a way that would make them feel comfortable to be church. So.
Yeah, for sure. Especially when you're leading with relationship and community, the religion aspect of it can take on what it needs to be. But yeah, I like that. You did mention that you make decisions. This is my interpretation of what you said, that you make decisions kind of as a body and that it gives people the opportunity to take ownership of it. So do you have examples of the kinds of decisions that you've made together instead of just like the one leader with their suggestions? Like what decisions have you made together as a group?
That would be pretty much every decision. I mean, most congregations have like a business meeting where they come up with things and vote on it. And it's kind of just like that. You know, obviously there may be instances where, you know, the pastor would have to say we can do this or can't do this to keep it in line with Community of Christ identity. But other than that, we kind of meet as a steering committee and say, this is what we're going to do. Everybody's voice should be heard and come to a consensus or, you know, at least what the majority of people want to happen and try to be compassionate of each other, even if someone doesn't agree. There was some contention about the billboard going up, but everyone finally came to agree, well, you know, what it should say, if we should even do one. So that would be, you know, probably the biggest decision that we've had to make besides moving into our own space. Our effort is a community effort and it's going to take all of us to get there, and that's really how we're approaching things. We all contribute. We all put in lots of hours to do this, and everyone needs to be valued and have an input in it, because I believe if you feel like you have an ownership of it or if you feel passionate about it, then you're more willing to give of your time, talents to make it happen. So I want everyone to feel like it's theirs and what they're contributing really matters.
I'm curious because this is something that we've tried to do in my own congregation of just trying to figure out what is it that people want to be engaged in, what makes them come alive and what makes them have an invitational heart and all those things. So have you done specific brainstorming activities or, I mean, have you discovered what spiritual people are or any of those activities that would help just decide or figure out or find what options are available for you to do?
To be honest, we haven't really done that. We've done exercises, you know, the personality exercises, but I think we are so ingrained with the LGBT issue that that kind of takes precedent over a lot of things, because everyone here is either LGBTQ or allies. And that's kind of been our driving force. But yeah, we allow people to basically just bring up what they're passionate about. There's conversations taking place daily through Messenger and all of that about things going on in people's lives and what they want to be involved with. And everyone has been so far very supportive of each other's passions and very active. We allow people, we take turns each Sunday and let someone lead about what they want to lead about for the traditional, if we want to call it traditional service. And then the coffee and conversations on Thursday evening, basically non-church. They could talk about anything they want to talk about as long as they keep it civil and respectful. So we get into politics and other things like that. So that's also an opportunity for them to kind of take the lead and to share what they're passionate about and to bring awareness to what they want to bring awareness about.
It sounds like your leadership style, I mean, you're even hesitant to take on that label, is very side by side and very much listening to what the people want, what the people have passion for, what the people feel called to do. And you're walking side by side with them to empower them to do some of the heavy lifting or do the ministry or to do the outreach. Is that a fair analysis of what you guys are doing? Because I think sometimes in congregational life, whether it's a single pastor or a pastorate team, et cetera, they feel like maybe they have to take on everything, or we have some sort of idea of how things could run. And it's a tricky balance to get people to feel empowered to be able to move ahead in mission on their own. So I'm just impressed that you seem to have found that sweet spot, and that it's a ministry and a group that is really passionate about Christ's mission and making it their own in the context of your specific community.
Absolutely.
My next question would be, we talk about making Christ's mission in our own context. What do you see are the biggest pressing issues that your group is addressing?
I would say the biggest issue, it all goes back to community. I know I've thrown that word around so much, but that's really what's lacking. We have people who, you know, don't have a place to go for Thanksgiving because they've been disowned or whatever. And, you know, a couple of the ladies decided, well, we're going to open the church and have Thanksgiving there, have Thanksgiving at the church, you know, Thanksgiving evening. And I said, absolutely, that's what we need to do because we have people who don't have a place to go. So I look forward to that. There's probably going to be 20 to 30 people here Thanksgiving evening, and that's amazing. So I would say the biggest thing that's lacking is community, and that's really what we're trying to focus on. And it's hard sometimes when you have people looking for a spiritual home as well as a community of support, but then you have those who are trying to just find a sense of support and don't really want the religious side of it. And that's, you know, where we're going to really start touching on doing, you know, different things on different days to provide opportunities for everyone. I've decided that Sunday is going to be more traditional worship service in our sense of traditional. Thursday is going to be coffee and conversations for people who just want to come and chit chat and build a community and build a network of friends and support system. And on Monday and Tuesdays, we're tossing around the idea of opening up kind of what we call the Rainbow Center for people to come in and just simply be, whether they need to do homework or fill out job applications or whatever. Our hope is to, you know, have a computer station and just have resources, community resources that are LGBT affirming for anyone who comes through if they need counseling, things like that. And we're also tossing the idea around of having a teen LGBT support group as well as an adult support group and a separate transgender support group. And we're just trying to do all of these things that are effective and community building. That's really what we're trying to hit.
With all of these things that you are saying that you're hoping to start, are there plans to partner with other organizations? Or I'm just thinking of people listening to this, if they have no idea where to start or don't feel like they have the capacity, but where do you guys find the motivation and the support to be able to sustain all of these things?
Well, we've been really lucky to have people who are meeting with us that are licensed LGBT counselors, and they work with a local agency. So they're really going to try to take the lead of the support groups. And we've had a lot of support from the Mission Center and the World Church as to, you know, how to do things and to have financial resources to do things. But yeah, that's basically the extent of our community efforts so far. I mean, we've had, when you do something that's bold, I guess, in a community that we live in, you kind of get put in contact with community organizations really quickly who are LGBT affirming, and Pride also opened the door for a lot of that. But yeah, I mean, just trying to build a relationship with people in other organizations and to try to allow them to lead things and to be involved kind of opens the door. Having teen groups, well, you know, we're inviting that agency in to do those so that develops a relationship with the community of Christ.
Not only are you utilizing the resources that you have in the community, but it sounds like you're utilizing the giftedness. So you're taking what people do professionally and are seeing how you can use that missionally. And I feel like the congregations that I see that are most engaged in the community really take advantage of that. They see what resources they have available, what people, what skills, et cetera, and then see how they can live Christ's mission out through what they already have to work with.
Absolutely.
Do you have anything else to say?
I was just going to touch on that will be part of, you know, the Rainbow Center as well, is other organizations can be represented. We would have brochures and business cards of those agencies. Being part of the LGBT community in Portsmouth may be a little difficult to navigate as to where to go on certain things. And that's kind of our hope, is to sort of, you know, offer things for the community through those agencies, but also serve as a bridge to those agencies as well.
Yeah, just a connecting point. And like you said, a bridge. I really appreciate that. And again, I'm just reminded that this all comes down to relationship. It all comes down to reaching out and being invitational. And again, I know that you don't like to take a lot of credit for it, but I just think this is such an inspiring story from such a terrible story, and how one family was really demonized and marginalized and publicly humiliated. And then from that, and from just sharing stories and being relational, has come this, which I think is just super, super inspiring.
It's exciting. And we've been at it for a year, and I'm just excited to see what the next year brings.
Yeah. So I don't know if I already asked this or if you mentioned it, but on average, what is your what do your numbers look like just on?
Lately, it's been anywhere from 15 to 20.
Okay.
We started with about 5 a year ago. It's kind of half and half now with adults and kids. I mean, there's some nights where we may have 10 or 11 adults and 10, 11 kids. And the biggest thing we're trying to focus on now is youth ministry, to build a community for them as well, to come and feel love, because some of them are in the LGBT community themselves. And, you know, the parents want them to grow up in a loving and supportive environment that they may not get in the school or in the community itself. So that's really our next project to take on is children's ministry, which I think most congregations would love to have that problem. And we're trying to tackle it the best we can while being as inclusive and welcoming as we can.
It sounds like you're talking about the Salt Lake congregation as well. Sometimes we have more kids than adults. Sometimes it's only my kids that are there. And then some weeks there's 30 kids and you literally don't know. It just depends on who shows up that week. But we do have a lot of people connected to the congregation. And so numbers fluctuate and we have a lot of kids. And so we're starting to really take into consideration youth ministry as well. We kind of have had this gap with teenagers, and that's something that we're going to shift focus on this coming year. So we might have to chat more about that.
Absolutely. Share ideas.
Seriously. What are some of your hopes for this little community of yours?
Like we've talked about before, my role as pastor or whatever, I try to see as equal as the steering committee and whatnot. But my hope within the next year is to develop, or not develop, but to mentor or nurture someone into taking the role of pastor and kind of continuing that role equally with the steering committee that's kind of guiding it anyways. But there still needs to be someone, I guess, technically on paper that is the pastor and kind of accountable for keeping it on mission with the church and what we feel is Jesus's mission. So that's my primary goal outside of trying to make it grow to be self-sustainable. Right now we have been very lucky we've been given about $20,000 from the Bountiful Mission Center to kind of get us started. And I'm very thankful to Barb Carter and to our Mission Center president for allowing that to happen and for taking the risk to invest in us and having faith in us to do the right thing. So that's been a big blessing. And my goal within the next couple of years is for it to be self-sustainable. My personal goal, as it has always been, is to continue to reach out into the community, continue meeting with people in coffee shops and whatnot until they're comfortable enough to come into what we may call a church, because there's some that backs away as soon as you mention the word church, they're done. So we spend a lot of time texting and drinking coffee with people to get to know them. And that's my personal mission for the next year, is to continue doing with that and to show people that, you know, church doesn't always have to be bad or a negative thing.
Again, I think what I hear you saying is that it just all comes down to relationship. And
absolutely.
In my own mind, again, I sometimes think I can overthink things. And take a step back and just really just understand that it is relationship, and that is what Christ's mission is all about, is having a community where everyone is loved and accepted and feels that they have worth, which I think that for, you know, a considerably small community, I mean, 10 to 15, 15 to 20 people, I think you said, you're making a lot of noise. You're making a lot of exciting things happen in your community. And I think that the energy that your congregation, emerging congregation, is putting out in the church is really contagious. And I know the gala organization shared your post from Pride. And if I'm correct, have people come to you for advice? Or, and I guess that is another question that I have for you. People who may want to get involved in Pride for the first time, or want to start some sort of startup group, support group for the LGBTQ community. What kind of advice have you given, or what kind of advice do you have?
Some have come seeking advice on that, and I have a hard time giving advice, because I have a hard time taking credit for doing anything. But I mean, I guess my biggest piece of advice is to just not be scared to take that risk and to be unpopular, I guess. You know, starting this has kind of caused some unpopularity amongst already established Community of Christ congregations. I think I'm safe saying that. So yeah, just don't focus on the negative, you know, feedback that you're getting from others, but focus on the worth of all and the difference that you're going to make in people's lives, and just to be bold enough and willing to make that statement publicly. I think sometimes we get into the mindset of, well, we're welcoming, and, you know, everyone's welcome here. They can come here as they please. But, you know, if someone in the LGBT community who has been severely damaged, you know, drives by your church, what's going to show that you are welcoming to them? And that's obviously slapping a sticker on your sign that's rainbow, or flying the rainbow flag, and just things like that, to really put yourself out there, but also be sensitive to change. People you get may not be interested in typical church, and you yourself may have to work through all that you've been taught your whole life as to how things should be, or the traditions that you've grown up with, and be willing to adapt and respond and to meet people where they're at and not where you think they should be.
I think it can be difficult to maybe get beyond our own ego and our own way of doing things, and getting stuck in a rut and breaking out of those boxes and deciding to try something new.
Yeah.
Do you have anything else you'd like to say? I think that's about it for my questions, but...
I'm kind of at a loss. You know, I would just say that my eyes have been opened to a lot of things by reaching out to folks who may have come from a different background than what I have, or different church experience than what I've had. It's really caused me to dive deep into my own theology and my own perception of church, and really kind of deconstructed things that I have been taught, and that I've had to learn that it's about community and relationships over indoctrination or theological or traditional aspects that we've been told, you know, have to happen. It's kind of just adapting to your situation and being sensitive to the needs of those around you, and being willing to set your own preconceived thoughts and judgments aside and just go with it.
Yeah, which again, just be difficult to do, but I feel like your community is doing it with grace, and a lot of people are watching you, no pressure, but I just love how you shared so much of your journey with everyone, and like I've said, I think it's really inspiring to see you respond to something that was literally on the local news, and something that was very timely and contemporary to your town, and then to have it grow into this and have it be an inspiration to people all over the place in the church and beyond that. I'm really excited to see what happens with this billboard. That might actually, we might post a picture of it if you're okay with that on our website, because it's very colorful and eye-popping, you know, eye-catching, and it's, I don't know, I'm excited to see what happens with it. So.
Me too. We haven't had any negative experiences yet, but it's only been up for a day. But the positive statements have been just overwhelming from people saying, finally, something like this is happening. So it's really, I don't know. I mean, I think it's making a larger visual impact in the community than what we had, than what we know currently. I mean, there's been a community of people who have been oppressed and suppressed for so long, and there's something like that that may stir things up a little bit. So we're just kind of riding the energy and just being there for those who want us in our lives, and kind of just, I don't want to say feeding off that energy, but it's kind of fueling the fire a little bit. And as the conservative groups become more vocal, I see a spike in shares of our things. The Billboard post has been up for a day and it's already reached 7,000 screens. So that's exciting. And it wasn't even a paid boost or anything like that. It's just through people sharing.
So, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's exciting.
That really is awesome.
Yeah.
And I think as I hear you speak about this, Justin, it's, to me, it sounds like you're just living out the mission prayer. You all were very fully awake and ready to respond. And even if you didn't know what A, B, and C was, the path wasn't clear. You took that step in faith and just trusted that what this was going to become was what it needed to be.
Yeah.
I just really admire that.
Yeah, we had no clue what we would be in a year. We had no clue that we would be in our own space doing our own thing as a congregation in a year. And we still, you know, although Pride was 6 months ago, we still get people messaging our group page wanting to learn more about Community of Christ and what we're about. So it's been a very good outreach tool as well. So that would be another recommendation. If you're wanting to reach a community that's broken and oppressed, show up at your local Pride events.
Yeah. Yeah. And just make sure that your congregation's ready.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's probably a whole nother topic that we could have, you know, another episode on, but.
Yeah, that's why it's easier to start something new.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's where Jesus was hanging out. So I ended up telling someone who gave me a little pushback for our congregation being at Pride. And I was like, well, if Jesus were around, he'd be here too. So I think we're okay. I'm pretty convinced of that.
Yeah, me too.
Awesome. Okay. Well, Justin, I don't want to take up your whole evening, but I just want to thank you for coming on kind of a short notice and just sharing a little bit about what's going on in your neck of the woods, because it is brewing and I'm excited.
It's very exciting, and I thank you for having me on and to listening to what we're about and what we're trying to do.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for listening to Project Zion Podcast. Subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcast, Stitcher, or whatever podcast streaming service you use, and while you are there, give us a 5-star rating. Project Zion Podcast is sponsored by Latter-day Seeker Ministries of Community of Christ. The views and opinions expressed in this episode are of those speaking and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of Latter-day Seeker Ministries or Community of Christ. The music has been graciously provided by Dave Hines.